Good morning, 6:41 a.m. on July the 21st, a Sunday. 16 and a half on the first mile. Not bad. This is a Sunday saunter. I'm not really pushing very hard today. I'm just happy to be out. It's a bit humid this morning. It's quite cool. It's quite pleasant, but quite humid as well. So even though I'm not working very hard, I did work up a sweat. So yeah, let's see. Yesterday was one of those, oh crap, it's 7 a.m. before I even rolled out of bed. And of course, when I got up, everybody else got up, so the day just sort of went to hell in a handbasket really quickly. Tara Lee said I should schedule the weekends to be downtimes anyway. That's not a bad idea. And perhaps I will going forward. The problem is I never know if it's going to be Saturday or Sunday or both days that I can't do it. And given my choice, I would rather try to do it. But given my history of weekends, I'm not sure anybody expects them anymore. I'm going to try to get back to an everyday schedule. I don't know. I don't know if that's even possible anymore. It should be. We're coming up on the backside of summer. August is going to be beastly hot, but as long as I get out between 6 and 7, I should be okay. So we'll see. We'll see how it works out. Getting back on track on writing. I didn't talk to you yesterday, so I couldn't tell you that I got 5K on Friday, which was the biggest day I've had in a long time. And 3K yesterday, even though I did not write in the morning at all, because of reasons. And I recovered in the afternoon and got up to 2K in the afternoon and then knocked off another 1,000 after dinner just before I went to bed. I'm not sure how the story's working, but it's unfolding, and that's the important part. I'm now at about, if I remember correctly, I think I'm at 26K, which means I have 14,000 more words to get to my 40,000 target. And at 2 or 3K a day, that's something between 5 and 7 days, I guess. I also have 2,000 words from one of the earlier iterations that, as the story unfolds, I'm pretty sure I can tag on to the end to answer the last of the important questions in the story Bible for Greedock, which is, how did he take over the Krakens? I may need to go back and fill in some, but even if it goes to 45 or 50,000 words, I don't think Scott's going to complain if it's too long. He can always chop it up, take out the bits he doesn't like, and I expect he will. So, okay, yeah, cool. Actually, if I get it to within 38,000 and I'm happy with the way the story ran, I'm going to send it to him anyway. Let's see what he wants. I'll probably have to kill a half a dozen more people. I've already got a body count of 9 or 10. Mostly enemy. So, yeah. Not a typical squeaky clean Nathan Lowell story. Not that any of the stories after Quarter Share was particularly squeaky clean. But I think, let's see, other than Captain Share actually killed off the most people, although nobody really sees it because Ishmael doesn't look at it that way. And they weren't done, like, on screen. It was sort of like picking up after. Which was good. Anyway, so yeah, we're making progress. We're working. The story is getting put together one block at a time. I'm not letting my inner editor get too far into the way. I just, it's like, okay, is there continuity here? Yeah, go. Okay. And off we go. It's anywhere from 750 to 1500 words an hour. It varies widely, I've discovered. Particularly the first session of the day, the first hour, can be somewhat sporadic as I struggle to pick up the thread. But one thing that I probably should be doing is quitting in the middle of a scene or something so that I have a place, a thread to pick up and keep knitting with. But I find that what I'm doing instead is writing a chapter and then another chapter and then another chapter and then putting it down and then picking it up again, and now I've got to figure out what the next chapter is going to be about. Which is not necessarily a bad thing, because what it means is that the chapters themselves tell little stories. Each chapter has its own little sort of mini story within it. It can't exist on its own. It requires the chapter before, or perhaps an earlier chapter in the book, to make sense. And it has not resolved everything at the end of the chapter, which requires you to keep reading. So I think it's doing, but it has an arc. It has a particular piece, a story, an element that moves the book forward. So meeting Chodo, who will go on to become Chodo the Bright, and meeting Vyrak, which we haven't done yet, but which we will, I think, soon. Masal has had a couple of chapters of his own, almost. Although, told from Greedock's point of view, that Masal is quite an interesting character, I think. And so is one of Greedock's main warriors, who has been his sort of sidekick and foil, his security advisor from the beginning of the story. So seeing how this brood resolves itself is going to be quite an interesting challenge. I think it's going to be quite good, quite... There's a lot of little wheels within wheels in the story. It's much more complex than I initially calculated it to be. And there's a ton of characters, and in large part because there's 24, 25 members of Greedock's original brood. Now, I'm not sure how that corresponds with canon. Perhaps I'm establishing canon. But he has met Yalon the Self-Sacrificing. He's met and recruited Chodo already, even though he is as yet unnamed. Both of them are unnamed. So, I'm pleased with the story. I'm happy with the way that it's going, and I'm sure Sigler, once he gets his hands on it, will fill it with gore and violence as only he can, which is fine. As long as it's off my desk, I don't really care. Sounds terrible, but it's true. Good morning. So I don't know if I mentioned this before, but my bread machine broke. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but the bearing that has the machine is set up so that there's a tray that gets inset into the top of the machine with all the ingredients in it, and a paddle that's powered from beneath that keeps things stirred up and kneads the dough and all the rest of it. So it works quite nicely. Set the pan in, close the lid, and measure all the ingredients in the pan, set the pan in, close the lid, punch the button, and it works for about 3 or 4 hours, and then beeps at the end when the bread is ready. So I went to make bread the other morning, and I put it in, clicked it down, started the button, and it goes, had that electronic buzz, the electric buzz of a motor that's moving but not spinning, or has power but cannot overcome the resistance. And I thought, well, that's damn peculiar. And I took it out, and sure enough, the spindle was jammed. I think the bearing is gone, or perhaps some honey or some kind of chemical reaction seeped into the bearing itself and froze it up or something. But even with a pair of vice grips and a hammer, I couldn't get it to start moving. In fact, all I was doing was stripping the paddle, so it was had a lot of flex in it where before it didn't have any at all. But luckily, Amazon has replacement pans for $20, and I ordered one, and it came the other day, so I've got a fresh loaf of bread waiting for me when I get home, so I can have my toast and peanut butter this morning in style. I'm quite looking forward to it. So I also didn't get to talk too much about meeting up with Brand on Friday afternoon. Friday was Friday was not my 5K day. Thursday was. So I might have mentioned it Friday morning. Sorry about that if I did. Anyway, so I met up with Brand. We had a nice chat. Had a nice lunch. And he almost missed his bus because we were sitting there talking and didn't realize quite how quickly the time was fleeing. But I think he got home. I haven't heard that he didn't. But it was a red eye, and then it had also been delayed a couple hours. So instead of taking off around 6 or 7, it was leaving at 10, which meant he wasn't going to get into the airport on the other end until 4 a.m. or something. But it was a nice chance to get out of town, to go talk with somebody other than my family. It's almost shocking how infrequently I talk with anyone who is not my family. If it weren't for my therapist on Monday, and all of you, of course, but we're not having a proper conversation. It's not like we're in meat space talking. You're just listening to me ramble. Except for that, it's exceptionally rare. I stopped and chatted up Brian Humphrey in the parking lot at school the other day. He teaches one class here in summer school, which is good because it gives him a planning period and a paycheck over the summer. And we're going to get together, not this coming week, but the following week, and talk about perhaps how do we renew and refresh this high school novel writing. It should be interesting. It'll be quite a challenge. I'm trying to think of, how do we do this? And part of it has to be word count, I'm afraid. And I think that really is the answer, because the big challenge with novel writing is word count. So it's the one thing that daunts high school kids. Well, daunts most people when they think, oh, I've got to write 100,000 words. I think we're going to do like 60,000, 50,000 to 60,000 words is a novel. Anything over 50,000 words is a novel. And I hate to do it, but I almost feel like I need to specify third person past point of view. The reason being, I suggested strongly that particularly for the first novel, past tense is almost required in order to figure out how the story is going to go together. And putting it in present tense is it's a difficult structure and requires a level of expertise that most beginning writers just don't have. And by the nature of their ages, these are all beginning writers. I'd like them to be experienced writers by the time they get out of high school. Unfortunately, I think most of them are already seniors, so there's not a lot of hope for it, but you never know. We might get a few who are not. And so first person is okay. First person will work as long as you understand the limitations of first person. I had in my writing group last fall, I had a couple of people who were quite enamored of first person, and they wrote half a dozen first person POV characters, and they kept swapping back and forth between them, and it was in present tense, because they discovered quite soon, like after about three pages, that first person present tense did not work very well when trying to tell a complex story. We also had a lot of paranormal people who really only wanted to write violence and gore and vampires. It was like, seriously? These are the best ideas you have. Running over people with cars and being bitten. I suppose there's a certain affinity between teens who have this change going in their body, or they are trying to cope with becoming something other than what they were. I suppose there's a certain affinity there for vampires, a kind of allegory for growing up that they see. In the same sense that zombies are a stand-in for disease, vampires and their immortality, their engagement in the forbidden, all right, 18 and a half on the back half. I'm not too surprised, I was just sauntering along. So I suppose, you know, there's a certain affinity there between teens and vampires that goes beyond Twilight, which in fact I think Twilight taps into. So I suppose I can't be too prescriptive. It sort of defeats the purpose of the exercise. But still, it's troubling because these are difficult stories to do well, and I really want them to do well. At any rate, I am at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day. It's a Monday. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.